Welcome to the All IVF Ever Wanted podcast with
Gareth
and
Emma.
That's me. Documenting our next and possibly final round of IVF. This process will be keeping me sane and probably driving Gareth
a little bit crazy.
So we hope that this does also help you guys as well. So enjoy the episode. This episode, I am really happy to welcome Melanie Brown to the podcast, All IVF Ever Wanted. And Melanie is a nutritionist with a speciality in nutrition for fertility. She has a keen interest in sperm health as well, which I know a lot of our listeners will be pleased to hear, because quite often it's all just weighted on the egg bearer, which can be a lot of pressure to bear, but it is a 50-50 thing, takes two to tango. So Melanie, welcome to the podcast, and how are you today?
Thank you, Emma, and thank you very much for inviting me to do this podcast. And I'm fine. I'm looking at the sun. So I know you've probably got lots of sunshine, but we have some sunshine now. So that's good.
Which is always nice in the UK. Always nice. So Mel, I'd love it if you could just introduce yourself in your own words. Tell us a bit about you and how you've ended up in this space, doing what you do, helping the people the way you do.
Well, when I went to university very late as a second career in my late 30s, and I started training to be an osteopath, and then I realised I wasn't very good at it. And so somebody said to me, oh, you're always banging on about diet, Mel. Why don't you do a degree in nutrition? I thought, oh, all right, then I will. So I did. And when I left university, I ended up working at the Zeta West Clinic when it had just very first opened, which was, gosh, over 20 years ago. And she was a pioneer in complementary therapies alongside IVF, but evidence-based, you know. She got a lot of stick for it, actually, but she really, really, really pioneered it for everybody else in this space now, with hypnotherapy and counselling and nutrition and acupuncture and things. And then I went out on my own about 12 years ago, never looked back, always interested in fertility. I had fertility problems myself. Okay. So I guess that gave me the empathy, which I think is quite important in any kind of, well, with fertility, you don't have to have had cancer to understand cancer, for goodness sake, you know, to treat people. But I think it's really helpful if you've felt that panic, and that you have that understanding of what it feels like when your period comes, of what it feels like when your bloody friends tell you that they're pregnant, and how you want to kill them, basically.
It's so hard, isn't it?
Oh, you have to be a saint, and nobody's a saint, and I remember that so well. Then I had three miscarriages during my sort of quest to become pregnant. Then I went into early menopause when I was 42, so I had premature ovarian failure as well. So I kind of just get it, and it's really interesting. And then I became interested in sperm kind of along the way, where I was exactly, it was at Zeta West. We had worked with an excellent andrologist called Cheryl Homer, who's now a professor, and she got me interested in, because it was like, hang on a minute, why are we just thinking about the eggs? And we're not thinking about the sperm, you know, and that's, it sort of developed from there, actually. I had somebody who was advised to have a sperm donor, and he just couldn't understand it. He was very obese, actually. So I put him on a really strict diet, and he lost lots of weight. Anyway, to cut a long story short, he ended up having two children naturally. And I remember thinking, this is not a diagnosis you give to somebody without any investigation. You don't just say, oh, well, you wouldn't say it about, oh, you've got heart disease, so, you know, we're not going to bother finding out why, because we'll just leave you, and, you know. So that got me interested. Then I met Jonathan Ramsey at a conference, who I love, and he's the, you know, he's Mr. Sperm, really. He's the most
Mr.
wonderful
sperm. We've been to see him.
Yeah, have you?
Yeah, we've been to see him, yeah.
And he shares all his knowledge, and I've just become really interested in you know, it's a team effort. It's always about a team effort. And I hate it when my clients come and, you know, you know that they've been basically, you know, oh, it's your knackered old eggs, and oh, your sperm is wonderful, super sperm. Whether men translate that in their heads when they come back from seeing the consultants, I don't know, but that happens quite often. Oh, you're perfect, you know, it's just your eggs, you know, and that's just most of the time not even true, and it's very unfair.
Yeah, and well, in our case, you know, we had seven fertility cycles in, and that's only when we started to look at the sperm, because we had a regular sperm analysis. Definitely. And the fertility nurse came back and said, oh yeah, your sperm's amazing. But it's only amazing within the parameters that they are testing for that particular test. So yes, for those four or five parameters within a basic sperm analysis, it was all good. But that doesn't show you the DNA integrity. It doesn't show you all these other things. So I think for people that aren't working in this space, language and definition of parameters of these tests and understanding them is key, because as a Joe Bloggs off the street, someone says to you, your sperm's amazing, of course you're not going to look any further. But what should be said is, for this test with these five particular markers, it's good, but that doesn't show us these other ones. Right?
Yeah.
So it's context, and there's a massive lack of context around giving information from tests, because they just, it's almost like there's an assumption that you should know that it's only within the parameters of this test. But of course we don't know that, right? Because we're not, we're just normal people trying to build a family. You're not, you know, you've got to turn into scientists, you know, to navigate this world. It's crackers, really.
All you want to hear as a man is, it's fine. You don't, you're not really, you know, right, that's it, I don't need to do any more, it's fine, you know.
And what that can do, actually, I think, is as soon as a man's told it's fine, it, for some, it can be a shutters down. It can be, right, well, I don't need to look at me anymore, then it's like case closed, which can present even more hurdles in the egg and sperm coupleship, however that is, whether it's donor, whether it's, you know, however we're getting to.
Absolutely. And the relationship. Because you're not working together on this shared goal, you know, and you know, so it's very difficult. I mean, it's fascinating, and it's such a difficult place to be. It's just such a difficult, it's like no other branch of medicine or any other disease. It's out on its own.
And for us, you know, like we had done, I think, 8 or 9 sperm analysis, and they all came back great. But when we then went and did a DNA fragmentation test, went to see Jonathan Ramsey, did all the other tests, actually his DNA fragmentation was really high. But then it makes me think, you know, on all of the other cycles of treatment, we've never sat down and said, right, what's the prep? What supplements are you taking? What food are you taking? We weren't aware that it took 74 days to regenerate sperm. It's this assumption that sperm, I think there's an assumption that sperm
it's
is
just always there.
You know, every time it's,
I mean, it is all
every time there, but there's an ejaculation, it's regenerated and it's fresh sperm, and it's not true. And I think that's really important for people to know. And then this time he's done a 12-week prep. You know, we came to you, we had a consultation, and he did his 12 weeks supplements, his 12 weeks prep, and we redid his DNA fragmentation, and it's really, his DNA fragmentation is now really, really low.
Isn't that amazing? And it's not really rocket science, is it?
No, you but know. If you don't know what to do, it can have a really adverse effect. And that's kind of what I want to get, you know, we'll talk about that as we talk more now.
Yeah, absolutely.
As we cover like the basics, right? So let's start at the beginning. So obviously we've covered a couple of things. It's important for both the egg and the sperm parties to be doing their prep.
It is, absolutely, and you think of it as a project. That's it, it's a project
that we do in prep for the retrieval, and obviously, or do we, and also for people that are just generally trying to conceive.
Just generally trying to conceive. And you know, it's very difficult to do things very strictly if you're kind of got this open ended. It's much easier if you know, right, I'm doing IVF in 12 weeks. Anybody can do anything in 12 weeks. You know, you just put your mind to it and do it. It's more difficult if it's a bit open ended. So then you just have to go through all the things that, what's what I do with my clients is go through all the things that I know damage sperm. So it might be medications or drugs that they're taking. There's a surprising number of kind of fairly straightforward medications. For example, hair growth medication. Mm-hmm. Loads of guys are using finasteride or, you know, different Propecia, different kind of topical things to, and it works a treat. But it's not very good for sperm.
Yeah.
So you, nobody ever asks them, I do, and they look at me like, what are you asking?
What's that got to do with my sperm?
What's that got to do with anything? You know, and I have to be really careful because it could be somebody who's got no hairs, as bald as a coot, or it could be somebody that's got a really big head of hair. I still have to ask them, you know. Things like statins, antidepressants, steroids. You know, guy goes down the gym, you know, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, you know, pumping iron, you know, a bit of creatine in a protein shake. Terrible for sperm, all of these things. And these are just lifestyle things, you know, they're not kind of shooting up heroin in the corner. They're just taking their protein shake, you know, but they can really impact sperm if you're a little bit vulnerable to it. So your sperm's a bit borderline, a bit, you know, maybe kind of. Most people's sperm isn't great, to be honest, Emma. You know, it really isn't. I've very rarely seen a very good semen analysis, probably because of the people that I see. But generally, it's you know, sperm is definitely going down swanny, you know, in terms of the general population. So we go through those, and then they might, you know, they might be having a really super healthy diet. And there's no doubt about it that people, of course, all sorts of people conceive, you know, fat bloke down a pub, drinks 10 pints a night and smokes 40 fags and boom, out comes the babies and you want to kill him as well, you know, well, I do. But that isn't his issue and he isn't necessarily having healthy babies, you know. I mean, that is more of an issue, is actually the health of the baby. You know, all sorts of genetic mutations take place in sperm that, you know, don't really come out and they don't cause necessarily infertility, but they, you know, can come out in the child,
the health of the children.
The health of the children, we know from epigenetics now that that's the case. You know, we look at, you know, obesity, obesogenic diet, what you eat that makes you obese is as important as being obese. So if you just eat a lot of really nice food and you know, spend a lot of money on food and eat loads of vegetables as well, then there is some evidence that that is better. You might still be obese than if you're obese because all you eat is chicken and chips and sandwiches and Subway burgers, you know, bigger the better, and all that kind of stuff, you know. So those are things that are relatively easy to change when people have got such a big goal to work towards, you know. And that tends to work quite well for the 12 weeks, but it's, again, as I said, it's difficult to get people motivated for, like, oh, it might be a year or it might be, you know, whatever. But to be honest, most people, the desire to have a baby is so big that people make a lot of sacrifices to do it, and they take it on board. I tend to try and say, look, just to use a lot of visual, you know, sort of images, really, to so you can connect with your, I try and make men sort of connect to their testicles, not just try and work out what they're there and why they're meant to be outside the body and how, why they keep cool and what sperm do. They've got to swim the channel and then headbutt their way into a thing as big as a house, and they've got a lot of competition, you know, they've been fighting off, you know. So you can sort of imagine your sort of, and why they need this energy and what's in the head. The head is full of zinc and, you know, and their tails, loads of energy and flip-flapping about and fighting off the competition. Yeah, it's a hell of a job being a sperm. and I do that with eggs as well, you know, just try and put a visual picture of why you should eat X, because it's good for your ovaries, you know. And I talk about cows having IVF and what vets and farmers know far more about nutrition, especially male nutrition, than humans do, you know, because there's money in it, you know.
It's just when we grow up knowing so little about what's good. And for example, what might be good for a weight loss plan might not be good for fertility. So what I hear a lot is people saying, oh, well, I'm eating really healthy, you know, and I'm doing this and I'm doing that. And now that I've learned a bit more and I obviously had a consultation with you guys and understood a bit more, what I'm noticing is that just because we think we're leading a healthy lifestyle, that doesn't equate to best or optimal nutrition for fertility health for sperm and eggs.
Yeah.
For example, you know, diet products or low fat products, things like this, one would be led to believe that this is doing the best for me, right? But is it for fertility?
That's a very good question. There is now a lot of research on what is now called ultra processed food. So you look at it, it's a low fat flavored yogurt, okay, 0% fat, it's got the peach flavor or something like that. Oh, this must be better for me than that full fat Greek style yogurt, wasn't it? Because it's low fat. And then you look at the ingredients. Now, can you replicate that in your kitchen? No to hell, you can't, because it's got this and that and stabilizers and things that make it taste better. So everything from commercial pizzas to low fat things that have artificial sweeteners in them to, you know, these ultra processed is a good word. You know, a processed would be something like a cat, like tinned tomatoes. They've been processed into cans. But an ultra processed food is something that pretends to be something that it isn't, basically, with the aid of chemicals. And there's a huge amount of research on health issues that go with consumption of those. And eggs and sperm are cells like any other of your cells, except they're critically important, really, because they have the DNA of your future child in them.
Yeah.
And you can make that DNA wonky by all sorts of different exposures, be they chemical or you know, fast foods or, you know, BPA. And that doesn't mean that you can't, you know, you can't ever have chicken chips or, you know, my god, if you drink a plastic bottle of water, that's it, your eggs are down the drain. Of course it's not that, but it's the regular consumption of these foods which are sort of like toxic, really.
Because to make them low fat or make them low sugar or make them diet, they've had to be substituted with a load of stuff that isn't of natural form.
We don't know how to process it. So it just goes off and does all sorts of weird things. And we're only just discovering this now, you know. And sperm particularly is very vulnerable to damage. That's why men make so many sperm. Millions of sperm are made because so few of them make the grade. If you think a normal semen analysis, only 4% of your sperm has to be normal for you to be normal. So 96% of your sperm could be abnormal, and that's counted as a normal result. You know, they're very easily damaged. So you've got to look after your sperm. You can look after your testicles. And yeah, you've got to look after your eggs, because your eggs, they were with you when you were 20 weeks gestating in your mother's womb. You know, that's when the eggs are made. Yeah. So
crazy, that, isn't it? And it's just I'm glad to be having this conversation, like debunking a few of those things, because although something that's diet or low fat might be good for shedding weight if that is your current MO, but not good if we're trying to support our fertile health, and not good if we're in that, you know, 12-week prep before an IVF cycle.
But not good, you know, evidence has shown that people who take artificial sweeteners put on more weight than people who don't, because it never changes your brain's expectation of fat and sugar. You know, you've just got pretend fat and sugar in, so the brain is like, whoa, that tastes like sugar, where is it
still searching for it.
It's I'm still looking, and so it sets up cravings, people break diets. It isn't just ultimately
good for
just
you.
A good diet is always the cornerstone of health, and not pretend eating food that's pretending to be something it isn't, you know.
So what are the big no-nos for IVF prep in a diet? So what should we be avoiding if we're coming up to an IVF cycle?
Well, if you're looking, you know, I always have to caveat this with, because I know it can produce so much anxiety, you know, people sort of just get so anxious about anything and everything. And it's really important, because that's going to be, you know, as bad as anything, having these high levels of anxiety. But I suppose coming up to, you know, like at the beginning of your IVF cycle, you know, say when you start the drugs, whether it's long protocol or short protocol, the starting of the drugs is the key time, I generally say. Now, this is when I want you to be really, maybe a slightly borderline neurotic about, you know, making some of your food organic, you know, particularly the foods that should be organic. And I tend to give people a list of the most heavily contaminated foods versus the ones that it doesn't really matter. You can see these online. They're called the Dirty Dozen and the Clean 15. And the EU has just released the 2021 version of it. So they're very useful. But it doesn't matter if you eat spinach that's not organic. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just try your best to kind of, because of the, you know, chemicals around the drugs, there seems to be some evidence of an interaction possibly between environmental chemicals and the IVF drugs. So BPA, plastic chemicals. So the biggest thing with BPA is never heat anything in it. Just never, I don't care about microwaves, but never put a plastic container in a microwave to reheat your food. Just don't. It's a bad thing to do. So BPA, pesticides. It's probably easier to say the good things to say the bad things, because then, you know, it's less, I mean, there's lots of bad things, but they're the things we've already talked about, you know. You know, don't go down to Kentucky Fried Chicken and get your, I know there was a rumor on the internet not long ago about eating burger and chips after
fries. So quite a lot of people, so quite, I see it online a lot. So it seems to be that a bit of a thing, I don't know why, that after a transfer, everyone goes and has a celebratory large portion of McDonald's fries and then eats apple, pineapple cores. I mean, I was going to ask you this, so tell me.
I would say that the fries, I don't think that's a great idea. Industrial cooking oil. You know, well-used, well-heated, industrial, cheap cooking oil for your chips. Not good. And I don't
just
really
guys, Mel's face is saying no right now. Look all over Mel's face is like,
not that I'm against chips. I mean, you know, I like a nice chip myself. But not, embryo transfer is such a delicate time, you know, and there's a huge amount of activity that goes on that helps that embryo implant. And so there is no evidence that eating chips is going to, you know, be particularly bad for you, but there's no evidence that eating pineapple is particularly good for you. So, you know, I think eat pineapple cores if you want to. Don't overdo it, because you just get a bit of a tummy ache if you eat the whole pineapple core. I'd say don't eat, I mean, eat chips if you really want to eat chips, but don't eat chips, McDonald's fries, because you think you read on the on Instagram that it was really good for your transfer, because it isn't. It just isn't.
Yes.
But, you know, it's not the end of the world if you do, but don't fool yourself that it's a really good thing.
I mean, I need to read as to why that's even come about. I don't even know, but either way.
I think the chips thing, I remember reading somebody saying that their IVF nurse said, oh, just don't worry, just go and have a burger and a big plate of chips. And that's the best thing you can do for embryo transfer. And I think it was as simple as that. And it got sort of put out, you know, my nurse said, I'm going to eat a burger and chips. Somebody else then translates it as, oh, that must mean a burger and chips is really good. And somebody, well, I think chicken and chips is really good. What about McDonald's? Yeah, McDonald's, you know how Instagram is, you know. And now we've got having a McDonald's plate of chips is really good for embryo transfer. You know?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know where it's come from. Is it something, did I read something to do with sodium or something like that? No, maybe I've got that wrong. I don't know.
You know, if an embryo is going to implant, it's going to implant. Otherwise, the human race would have died out a really long time ago. I think you just eat sensibly. You try and get good endorphins. You make a plan for your 2-week wait where you're not running about like a loony. But I always say to people, look, open up your newspaper. Are there good exhibitions, films that you can go and see? Because soon you'll never go to the cinema again if you have a baby, you know, that'll be that. So, you know, avoid people who stress you out. You know, we've got friends who we like, but we always wonder why we feel knackered when we've left them.
Energy suckers.
Energy suckers. And personally, I think, you know, the mind has a lot to do with that. And it's such an anxious making time that putting in that good food, rest, walking, being outside, daylight, nice things, that's more important than eating or not eating chips or eating or not eating pomegranate juice and pineapple and all that kind of thing. But that's only my personal opinion. So.
So I would like to ask you some of these questions that have been sent in. Is that all right?
If I can answer them, I will.
Okay, so let's have a look. What have we got here? What type of foods will help sperm quality?
That's a very good question. So really, the cornerstone of all healthy diets is what is called the Mediterranean diet, which actually is more of a concept than a reality, unfortunately, nowadays. But it's just a diet that's got loads and loads of colour in it. So colour. Mm-hmm. And men respond very well to a diet that's packed full of antioxidants rather than them taking loads of supplements full of vitamin C and vitamin E and things like that. Actually, there's tons of research on the Mediterranean diet and its effect on sperm, as well as embryo, actually, as well as females. So it's taking out the sort of fried food and the heavily processed food and replacing it with lots of vegetables and fruit. You're thinking color, dark green, red, orange, yellow, purple. The more colors, the better, because the antioxidants are in the pigments of vegetables and fruit. Nuts are a real superfood for sperm, particularly walnuts. Lots of excellent research. If anybody's interested in the effect of nuts on sperm, there's a study called the 30 nuts. I always call it the Spanish nut study, but it's called the 30 nuts study. Came out in 2018. It's an excellent study on the on how nuts for your nuts. Everybody
nuts
says that.
For your nuts.
Nuts for your nuts. So tomato products, particularly pureed, processed tomatoes. We talked about the difference between processed and unprocessed. So tomato puree, the most processed, dehydrated, you know, concentrated tomato, contains something called lycopene. And lycopene is really good for sperm. So I always get, there is a supplement out at the moment, but I always get my blokes, my poor men, they're reeling by the time they've got their list of stuff that they've got to take. But I make them do a dessert spoon of tomato puree mixed with a little bit of olive oil every day.
So Gareth was doing that. He did, well, yeah, he did. It was his least favourite part of the whole thing.
Yeah, no, but he did it.
He did it. And then he would be like, oh. And in the end, he'd brace himself. He'd march to the fridge. And he'd be like, and he'd literally do it like a shot. Just be like, just do it. But he did it, you know, he did it.
It's so good for him. It's really good for sperm. It's really good for the prostate. The prostate is where the semen comes from, some of the semen. And the semen is what the sperm is in. So if the semen isn't great shapes, then the sperm, it can't survive in semen that's not perfectly hospitable for it. So those kind of, you know, things, sunflower and pumpkin seeds, they're very simple, but they're a very good form of zinc, of natural zinc. Making sure you have your vitamin D if you need it. Do a quick test. MediCheck, Better You. You can do a test online. In the wintertime, everybody should take vitamin D. Really, when the clocks change in October, it's like, ping, right, what do I have to do to prepare for winter? But vitamin D is very important for sperm. So, you know, there's lots of things which are just very simple things you can do to improve your sperm. It's almost like common sense. So just Mediterranean diet, there's tons of studies. If you go on Google Scholar and put in Mediterranean diet sperm, you'll get tons up. I mean, they don't really differentiate the vegetables, but that is what they are: low red meat, bit of fish, bit of chicken, turkey, whole grains, what you would imagine, you know, a little bit of red wine, not too much coffee, you know, a bit of a cake, treats, you know, treats are treats, you know, piece of cake, chocolate. The vast bit. So I've done like a Mediterranean diet pyramid, mm-hmm. which I'm very happy to let you have, which basically, so the bottom of the pyramid, or the triangle, I suppose, is all your fruit and veg, and then your whole grains, and then right to the top is sort of alcohol, red meat, you know, mm-hmm. sugar and stuff like that. But it's still on there. It's still on there because, you know, so that's kind of very long-winded answer to a very simple question.
But it's, no, but it's really informative, and it's about getting those percentages right, you know, like the majority of what we're doing, let's gear it in this direction. Yeah. And meats and fish, organic where possible. It's not always possible, right? But just organic where you
don't
can.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah, organic where you can, and, you know, things in moderation. And just a quick one while we're on the sperm, and a lot of guys go to the gym and take protein shakes and things like that. What's your view on those?
Well, the interesting thing about protein shakes is the evidence seems to be rather against men taking protein shakes. Now, you know, I'm not sure that the research necessarily stacks up, just because there are so many variables when you are looking at men who take protein shakes. Are they also using steroids? Mm. Are they eating 4 chickens a day and no vegetables? Because guys do that when they're pumping.
Oh, Gareth's diet was very, you know, very beige. He'd be like chicken and rice, chicken and rice, chicken and rice, chicken and rice.
God.
Beef and rice. I'm like, can you just put some vegetables?
Yeah, we're on the colour here, you know. So it could be the protein shake might be, you know, soy protein, which in sort of consistently high amounts probably isn't very good for men. It could be pea protein. Again, I don't really go for pea protein with men, because both soy and pea they contain plant estrogens, and we don't want men having too many estrogens in their in their diets, because they will interrupt their testosterone. It will interfere with their testosterone production. Mm-hmm. So then we're down to whey protein. Don't know, really. I mean, I put my men on a smoothie, which is made of sunflower seed and pumpkin seed protein powder. There's a company called Clearspring in the UK that make that. Mm-hmm. But you can do it yourself. You know, you just have a seed grinder and you shove them in, and mm-hmm. you know, you maybe make a jar of it and put it in the fridge for some, like 3 days worth or something. And then they put their berries and their banana and their, you know, plant milk. Or skimmed milk, you know, skimmed cow's milk is okay for men. But again, you know, milk is from, it's quite an estrogenic product. So if you're not doing any of that and you're firing in, most men, when they're down the gym, won't have full fat milk, but, you know, they might have, you know, a pint or a litre of milk and then a ton of whatever. And then there's always stuff in it, you know, branched chain amino acids, creatine is a big thing. And that, we know that creatine's not good for sperm. So that turns up a lot in protein drinks. So it might not be the protein drink, it might be the creatine in it.
It might be all the other stuff.
You've got to be very mindful about things that you're doing on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. You know, now and again, okay, so what? Once a week, probably doesn't make any difference. Mm-hmm. 3 times a week, probably does make a difference.
Yeah. And that sort of brings me on to the point about dairy for guys. So when you are prepping for IVF, what's your take on dairy for the guys within that time?
Well, most of the evidence is not for it. It tends to be a bit anti-dairy, but it's mostly full fat dairy. And I think it's just because why dairy might be good for women during IVF is exactly the same reason why it probably isn't very good for male fertility. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very estrogenic. It's a very hormonal product. And it seems that it's not great. Now, the jury's a bit out as to whether skimmed or, you know, very low fat milk and cheese and stuff like that is okay. It probably is, because all of these kind of things that make it good for eggs and things are in the fat. So once you take the fat out, you've taken quite a lot of the things that may interfere with male fertility out as well. And I just usually say to my clients, look, if you're having milk on your cereal or you're having a latte, you know, cut all that out and keep your dairy allowance for something really nice, you know, really nice bit of cheese at the weekend or a yogurt with a curry, or don't kind of be slopping down great glasses of milk when you get home from work, you know. And it's surprising how many people do that, actually. So it's not none, but be mindful of not too many because of what it is.
Yeah, so for exactly, it's good for the female part, but for the same reasons it's good for them, it's not good for the guy.
Yeah, Scott, it's for growing baby animals bigger. That's what it's for. So it's got lots of growth factors in it. So for dairy during IVF, certainly, I think, the evidence seems to be fairly positive, and it kind of makes sense because these growth factors potentially may act on the follicles and on the eggs. There's loads of things in the fat of milk, vitamin A, different carotenes, lots of things that also probably are very beneficial around IVF, but men don't need those kind of things.
So they're beneficial for the egg bearer, but not the sperm.
Yeah.
And let's have a look. So I'm going to have a look at what are the questions. What extent does long-term alcohol use have on what extent does long-term alcohol use impact egg quality?
Depends what is meant by long-term. Mm-hmm. Is that long-term alcohol misuse, abuse?
Yes.
God, most people do drink to some extent. Mm-hmm. I do. So I think that it probably impacts it in different ways on different people. The way that it can affect your fertility is because alcohol and estrogen use the same liver detoxification pathways.
Mm-hmm.
And so you then have this sort of unmetabolized estrogen because alcohol has kind of taken preference. It's gone to the top of the queue and headbutted estrogen out of the way for the queue in the liver. And this can then affect your hormones a bit. But certainly there does seem to be evidence that, heavy drinking does impact, but because it impacts your hormones, probably you maybe don't ovulate. This is heavy, long-term drinking.
Mm-hmm.
If you're then with alcohol, you're looking at how it affects the rest of your health, because again, eggs are just a cell like any other cell. So if you drink a bottle of wine or half a bottle of wine a night, that's probably going to impact your fertility for sure. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. If you drink, a couple of glasses a couple of times a week at the weekend, no, it isn't going to probably affect your fertility.
Mm-hmm.
And I always say to my clients, both male and female, so both partners, you're in this together, stop alcohol completely 2 weeks before you start the IVF drugs. So if you're doing a short protocol, that's 4 weeks before egg collection. If you're doing a long protocol, that's 6 weeks before egg collection, approximately, both partners. So you go off it completely. But I think a couple of glasses, and it's quality over quantity. Alcohol can be just the worst thing, is all the additives. The least of your problems is the alcohol in a bottle of cheap wine, Don't have very much of it, but spend the money on it. Maybe you get an organic one, a really expensive French wine, which you're not kind of glugging, You're thinking, oh, God, this glass. A lot of money,
It's a very expensive glass.
Yes, very expensive.
Yeah.
And just enjoy it, because sometimes, especially with the long-term fertility, people who are just thinking about starting to conceive and they just want to know kind of the do's and don'ts, to be told as a person in your 30s, right, that's it, no alcohol, no caffeine, no this, no that, it's usually not going to work apart from anything else. It's not going to work. So you have to think, right, we won't drink during the week and we'll just have, we'll just drink a couple of glasses on a Saturday or something like that. Personally, I think that's fine. I don't think you can take everything away from people because it impacts their social life. People are like, you're not drinking. Anything to say? No, just like punch, I just want to punch you straight in the nose.
Yeah, I suppose it also depends on how sort of open you're being, choosing to be, or whether you're sharing it as well.
Don't want to, and a lot of men don't want to share. Women are so much better at sharing these things than men. But I think you have to just look, again, the population would have died out a very long time ago if having a bit of alcohol made a serious, but there's no doubt about it that drinking more than we should will impact fertility, the same as it impacts other aspects of your health, for sure.
And for us, I mean, so many rounds in, I think also there comes a point where you are willing to do anything. And, you know, for us, this many rounds in, we, like you say, like a project, for that 12-week prep, we were willing to go all in. And, you know, my husband loves coffee, but he didn't have any for 12 weeks, you know. He'd spent 4 weeks kind of weaning off it before the 12-week prep.
So
he weaned off it. Like every other was a decaf, you know, and then by the time we came to the 12-week prep, he did do it, because that's where we're at in our journey, where we were like, right, we just got to give it our everything so that we come out of this with no what ifs. So we can go.
And that's very important. Yeah.
For us, it was. For us at this point, coming out of it with no what ifs was almost critical, really, because we've every other cycle we've come out of it going, oh, if only we'd just done that, if only we'd just done this, if only we'd just done
and
that.
That's such a common thing, Emma.
Yeah. And we felt that every single round, you know, whereas this round we were like, if we just do, like you say, like a 12-week project, you can do 12 weeks, right? Gonna do this, and then we come out of it with no what ifs. And we know we've done our all this many rounds in. That's kind of the mentality we were in this time.
And that's a very, very, very common as well. And so that's where alcohol fits in. It very much depends on your personality and your partner's personality. Because often it's the woman partner, the female partner that's like, don't, you can't.
Driving.
You know, no, stop. You know, no, don't. What do you mean you had two beers with your mates tonight? You know, no, you're not supposed to be. And that can cause friction in the relationship. So it may be that you make that decision, look, we can do this for 12 weeks. We can do anything for 12 weeks, which is great. But then if you think, actually, I really think we might have a glass of wine on Friday, you don't beat yourself up about that. You know, you just think, okay, we're just going to have one glass of wine on a Friday. It very much depends on how you are as a person.
That's true.
Whether you're, you know, and how you are as a couple.
And also, I think where you're at in your, where you're at in your whole process, because it changes, right? We're very different. How we've approached this cycle is very different to how we approached our first cycle. You know, it's totally different.
You probably hadn't got a clue.
Well, no, we didn't know half these didn't know half these things. Can egg quality improve at 41 with nutrition?
That is a question that loads and loads of people ask. And if you asked an IVF clinic, they would say, no, your eggs are your eggs and there's nothing you can do about it. But I'm not sure that I totally agree with that. We can't see into eggs the way that we can see into sperm. We can see the genetic material in sperm. And certainly we know that certain things age eggs prematurely. So if that's the case, then nutrition can probably maintain the health of an egg, if you know what I mean. So we know that smoking impacts your egg quality. It really does. So if that's the case, if eggs are not, I mean, eggs are still, they're still sperm. So sperm, cells.
Yes.
Of course, all our cells is impacted. You know, our skin, if we eat, you know, my skin, I get, I don't know, I'm pretty ancient, I still get spots. And often that's dietary, you know, so I know what to eat and I need to kind of, you know, quite vain. So I need to, you know, I eat sort of anti-aging stuff. And I would apply that same logic to eggs, that while they're maturing from the little tiny, tiny germ cell into that fully mature at the end of stims, there's your eggs, you know, you want these nice peachy eggs. You're going to put the protein in, you're going to put the antioxidants in, you're going to make, going to help the ovaries pump them out, and you're going to protect them from damage. And that's what the Mediterranean diet and antioxidants do. They protect our cells from damage, and that is really important. So I think in a nutshell, that wasn't a nutshell, that was one of my rambling answers again. I personally think that nutrition can impact the health of eggs, but probably at the margins, as opposed to, you know, I couldn't hand on heart say, I can make your eggs really young. I can't.
No, but we can certainly optimize the conditions, right? And give ourselves the best chance. And I think when you're in a place where you've had losses, multiple failed rounds, then all of these, it's not one thing that's going to be your magical answer. That doesn't exist, right? But if we can just look at all the little variables and say, right, well, I'm going to just optimize that one, and I'm going to optimize that one as much as I can within what's possible, feasible, reasonable, then all of these little dial ups are going to give me the best chance collectively as a like a group effort, you know? And that's kind of the way I think about it, because obviously our age is our age and we can't change those things, but there's certainly things we can do to help and prop it up and give ourselves the best chance, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And that period of time during stims, I think, is a good... I always say to my clients, look, imagine you're growing tomatoes and you want them to win the prize in the bait, okay? Shows my age, doesn't it? And those tomatoes, you know, you have to get them going. So 2 weeks before you're going to pick them for the fate, you're going to put in this absolutely supercharged fertilizer. You know, it's really the big kind of wham. So that is where you get in those antioxidants, all the carotenes, the orange pigments in vegetables, your broccoli, because... you know, it's really good for your hormones, and your protein drink, you know, your IVF protein smoothie, you're whamming in this supercharged fertilizer for your eggs. And that's how I like people to think of it. You know, that tomato is still going to be the same tomato, but there's a world of difference between a neglected tomato that hasn't been watered or spoken to or had any decent feed and the one that has been looked after. So if you can think of your eggs a bit like tomatoes, then I think it's quite helpful.
Yeah, and that's it, isn't it? Because I think, I mean, I know, because I have lots of DMs and conversations with people, they a lot of people just have no awareness that actually that last 12 weeks before ovulation,
oh yeah,
there's a lot that we can do to support that maturation of the egg and give it the best chance, right? So let's have a look. Should we eat? So women, this is a question from an egg bearer. Should we eat dairy while trying to conceive or not? There's not so much conflicting info, not sure what to do.
Well, that goes back to our conversation that we just had about dairy. I think dairy sort of statistically or you know, from various observational studies, seems to be helpful for female fertility, but you have to caveat that with what the individual person's got. So it, say somebody had polycystic ovaries or fibroids or acne, eczema, asthma, IBS of some kind of constipated generally, then I would be a little bit cautious about dairy in those situations, because it potentially could make all of those things worse. Endometriosis, you'd have thought it would be the last thing that you should eat with endo, but there is no scientific research of any standard or quality criticizing dairy. It's very interesting. Whereas red meat is one of the things that's really off the menu with endo. So I think that if you don't have any of those conditions that I've just mentioned, then you just eat kind of dairy if you want it, and not if you don't want it, you know. And then go for that full fat milk during stims, because unless you're, you know, as much as you can, you know, dairy makes me spotty. I would probably do it for 2 weeks, risk it for stims, and then probably never have it again. But if I had the most awful diarrhea, or my eczema flared up really badly, then I wouldn't do it, because that's a strong immune response, and that's not good for you around IVF. So it's very difficult. It's why it's so much easier when you've got that person in front of you and you can just
individualize it.
So generalized answers are generally are sometimes not always the best thing, because it just depends on you. But I hope whoever asked that question is sort of thought, oh, I've got polycystic ovaries, maybe I better not. But then the 2 weeks of stims, polycystic ovaries is a good example, because lots of dairy while you're not, you know, trying to conceive or doing IVF is not recommended for it because of the insulin growth factor one. But during stims, people with polycystic ovaries sometimes have ovarian hyperstimulation, so the drugs will just send their ovaries into sort of overdrive, berserk, and loads of follicles are produced, and it's all over the shop. And the dairy, the protein smoothie, can calm that down a little bit. It's quite good for ovarian hyperstimulation. So there's no kind of hard and fast yes it's good or no it's not good. It's about, is it good for you,
yes,
or is it not good for you?
Yeah, so you have to think about what your individual hurdles are, right, as well.
Yeah. But generally, if you're fine, then dairy is good for women. And if the man just keeps it down and doesn't slosh down tons of milk and just, mm-hmm. you know, keeps it fairly moderate, then that's fine too.
Mm-hmm. There's also one here that we've already answered, but just so they know that we have, is it a myth that we should eat pineapple for frozen transfers? I think we've already discussed that.
But so again, only my opinion. I can't see any scientific evidence or reason why it should help. But it's not bad for you. So if you want to eat it just to cover all the regrets, you know, maybe I should have eaten that pineapple. And I understand that, you know, then have it. It's not like the chips.
Oh, the things we do, hey. If you turn around three times in a circle, tap your head five times. But, you know, it's like the psychological part, isn't it? I didn't do that. So, if... So if it helps you, do it.
If it helps you, do it.
Let's have a look here. Frozen embryo transfer prep. What can you do in the 2 weeks for frozen embryo transfer prep?
Well, you are looking at your nest, aren't you? You're looking at your... I'm mixing my metaphors. The nest for the tomatoes. You're looking at your nest for your embryo, and so it's about blood flow primarily. It's about getting really good oxygen nutrient rich blood to the endometrium, and then, you know, after transfer you want to feed that embryo and make it divide its cells and do all its stuff that it's meant to do. It's about lymphatic drainage. Lymph drainage is really important, and I just freaked out when lockdown started and we were all sitting down all day, and this is where the sitting disease, it's called now, has sort of really taken off, because we're not moving, and sitting down is so bad for us. It's so bad for us, causes massive health problems, but it's very bad for fertility. So men shouldn't sit on their testicles all day. It's really bad for them. And women, we've got no blood, proper blood flow to our pelvic region, to our reproductive organs. Lymphatic drainage, lymph is what takes all the crap away. It's like our bin men. Mm-hmm. And it only works when you move. So you have to kind of pump. And if you're sitting down all day, you've nothing. You've got this stagnant pond sort of thing. So exercise, standing up, standing desk attachment. You know, this was for frozen embryo transfer, so I got my friend to design a special class for my clients, because I, at lockdown, for some reason, I had loads of people going through frozen embryo transfer, and I was literally like, these stagnant ponds, no, I've got to get them moving. I'm full of analogies, like, you know, but so that is important, not full-on HIIT class, and, you know, I think I might run a marathon. No, but you need to move. You can't be lying down in your bed all day. It's not going to drop out if you move. Mm-hmm. And you just need to keep up, you know, your fertility diet, really. All the nutrients that you've been used to eating, you carry on with eating them. Mm-hmm. So your antioxidant-rich diet, you know, very delicate time. Implantation, actually.
And last one, and this is me being curious, is it true that for transfer or the 2 week wait, we should be focusing on warm food and drink as opposed to cold?
Well, that's a very interesting question, because that's like basis of that is Chinese medicine. I mean, they just don't eat cold food. And I remember when I was working for Zeta West, an Chinese acupuncturist, I remember her coming into my room and saying, "Mel, stop giving all the clients these salads and things." She said, "You can't." I said, "Why?" She said, "They're really good for you." She said, "You can't grow a baby in a fridge." She shouted at me, and I always remember that. Oh, okay. I think you can have a mixture. I think probably eating, and again, I'm sure there's probably no scientific basis for this in Western medicine, but I think eating lots of cold, raw food is probably not a great idea anyway, I don't think, for general health. But I don't think everything has to be cooked and hot. But, you know, my acupuncturist friends would be like, "No, I told you that, you know, that's not." But, you know, in Chinese medicine, you can't have dairy, you know, whereas I've got completely opposing view. So I think your warm, what they call the yang kind of food, so your sort of orange, warm, things like butternut squash and sweet potato and, you know, your fish and your nice, you know, nice lightly cooked vegetables and things would be fine. But then if you want to pop in, you know, a sandwich or a salad or something like that, that is not going to make you, that embryo is not going to go, sorry, I'm not implanting now because you're just eating a sandwich, you know. They're not. Not. So
thank you, Mel, for today.
You're very welcome. You're so easy to talk to, Emma, and I was just, you know, saying, commenting on how your Instagram reels always make me chuckle. They really do. Even though they're very about serious things, you know, they're not a comedy skit, but they're just like, oh, and I'm just like, oh, that just, it makes me smile, you know.
Oh, good.
So thank you for everything that you do for the community, you know, you're amazing. Thank you for asking me on,
just sharing my crazy little life. Just hoping it helps someone,
you know, keeping every single thing crossed for you.
Thank you so
you've
much.
You've done your best. It's in the lap of the gods now.
That's it. And it, do you know, it's interesting, this cycle we feel like we have done. There's nothing more we could have done. You know, we've had a full, you know, MOT on sperm. We've had a full MOT on me. We've done the nutrition. We've done acupuncture. We've done all the things. So it's a nice, it's a weird space to be in. And it's a nice space to be in because it brings an element of sort of peacefulness to it for us, that we think, well, we don't have, for the first time ever, we don't have any what ifs or should haves, or so it's, as much as it's sort of a weird space because it feels a bit final, it also comes with some calmness, which I think we're both quite grateful for, really. So we'll see what happens.
Well, good luck.
Thank you.
It's very good to talk to you.
Thank you. And where can we find you? So where can everyone find you? I mean, I tag you in, like, you're like in my stories daily, but where can
Instagram,
we find you?
My efforts at Instagram. I'm actually having a lesson, a 2-hour Instagram lesson on Friday. She won't believe. I said to her, I'm absolutely, she said, no, you're not. And then she mentioned a word that I just said, now that, don't mention that word. You have to tell them, talk to me in proper old person's language. Okay. For things like Instagram, so you never know, you'll be seeing the most stunning things coming off
I'm excited
not just last night's dinner photographs.
Your posts are always good, and like, I do, you know what I love also about your posts is when there's an article that comes out or something and hearing your view on it, it's actually really helpful because there's so much information, it can feel a bit bombarding sometimes. So to see an article that you've read then shared by someone who is educated in this space and experienced in this space to give their view on it, it's actually really helpful.
Oh, well, that's good. So there's my Instagram, you know, Melanie Brown Nutritionist. That's what it is, isn't it? At Melanie Brown Nutritionist. And then there's my website, which is just Melanie Brown Nutrition.
Amazing.
long.com.
Amazing.
So, yeah. And I'd be happy to help anybody who just needs a bit of guidance of the, the do's and the don'ts.
That's it.
It's as simple as that.
I think the individualized part of it is key, because there's certain parts we can generalize, certain parts, you know, certain supplements better than others, or you know, folate rather than folic acid, and ubiquinol rather than, we can do all that, and it's every, and that information is everywhere, really. But when it comes to your unique set of fertility hurdles, there might be caveats, and that's where the generalization perhaps might not be so helpful. So for us, we're very pleased that we've come to see you, and I know that there's a lot of people that follow me that are getting your advice too, and they're sending me messages saying that they're scheduled to see you, so I'm pleased but it's good because we underestimate how much we can help ourselves, right, with what we put in our bodies and what we're cleaning our homes with and what we're washing with and things, which I know that you also advise on. So good.
I think people think that it's going to be really awful and really difficult and really, and I think they're sometimes quite surprised when I just say, you know, have some poached egg on toast and my special egg and sperm salad. Come and see me to find out about that. I think they think, oh, it's going to be really like really difficult and I'm not going to be able to do it. And, you know, I'm going to have to cook for 10 hours a day.
No.
And it's not about that. It's just not about that. Otherwise, you know, you really would have the whole population. We would never have evolved out of the cave. You know, you have to be on a specific diet. Yeah. It's the do's and the don'ts that are really important.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for talking with me today.
You are very welcome. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. And if this podcast is bringing you any value or helping you in any way, what would be really lovely and what we would really appreciate is if you could hop over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a little review. And if you have liked it, give us 5 stars, because this is the thing that will help other people find our podcast too. And that's how podcasts get seen. So it would cost nothing in terms of money and just a few seconds of your time, but would really mean so much to us. So thanks for listening, and we'll be back next time.